The following content is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Out in the Garden. For the next half hour, enjoy articles to help you improve your green thumb. And now, here's NCRS volunteer Cindy Fowler.
This article by Nancy Brakey. Move houseplants indoors now for winter. A chill in the air is just the nudge gardeners need to look over their houseplants that have spent the warm months outdoors and bring them inside for the winter. Most of the popular houseplants are of tropical origin, which means they will not tolerate freezing cold. And despite the heat in the Piedmont the past 6 months, we can count on it freezing sooner or later. So now's time to bring in your plants and give them the best and brightest spot in your house or apartment. Even if you kept them on a covered porch, they are accustomed to a higher level of light than they will get indoors. But a window facing south or west should be good enough, even in the shorter, dimmer days of winter. While they required steady watering during hot weather, the ritual of watering should slow down now, because plants will not be growing as rapidly as they did in summer. However, you must still keep watch. Plants that have been in a pot for some time may have filled it with roots, leaving less room for soil to hold water. That means you will have to still pay attention to watering, just not in the daily way you did all summer. Some plants, especially the weeping fig, are famous for dropping leaves when they move to a different amount of light. Do your best to prevent wilting, which leads to yellow leaves. Another cause of yellow leaves is low humidity, which is to be expected in a house with the furnace running. Avoid this by setting your plants on a saucer or plate with pebbles and water, so that a little mist arises as the water evaporates. Be sure to use a saucer or plate that water will not seep through and possibly damage the floor or furniture. Clear plastic saucers are sold widely, are inexpensive, and will do the job. Do not let the bottom of the plant sit in water, however. Keep the water level just below the bottom of the pot. Slower growth also means less fertilizer, but some will be helpful about once a month. Through this semi-dormant season of autumn to late winter, add houseplant fertilizer to the watering can at half strength. That should keep the foliage green. Many of you are also enjoying potted chrysanthemums purchased in full bloom this month. These are very prone to wilting because the pots are full of roots. Wilting, followed by yellow leaves, are sure signs of inadequate watering. But given regular water and kept cool, mum flowers will last a long time. Once the flowers fade, cut them off, set the plant out in your flower garden, and await the arrival of poinsettias, which will come on the scene about late November. From Ask Nancy. Question: how can I protect my tulips from squirrels that like to dig up the bulbs after I plant them? Answer: first, take up all the bits of the brown, paper-like material that covers the bulbs. It's easy to knock this off when handling them during planting. The scent will draw squirrels. Second, while the soil remains loose in the days and weeks after planting, cover the area with a large plastic plant tray that annuals are sold in. Anchor it with a brick or large rock. This also works to protect potted tulips, which seem even more vulnerable than ones in the ground. Place the tray upside down so that it covers completely one or two pots. You must anchor it securely with a brick. Now from the National Gardening Association e-newsletter, Overwintering Herbs by Charlie Nardozzi. I've enjoyed harvesting fresh basil, parsley, and fennel from my garden all summer. Now that fall's arrived, it's easy to forget about those fresh herbs and resign myself to cooking with dried herbs. But I'm not giving up just yet. Some herb plants can be brought indoors to grow for months. Others can be protected in the garden over the winter and will bounce back next spring. Here are some suggestions for keeping herbs through the winter, indoors and out. Herb plants can be annual, biennial, or perennial. Perennial herbs such as chives, lavender, oregano, thyme, and overwinter well in the ground. In most areas, wait until a few hard freezes and then cut back tall herbs within 4 to 6 inches of the ground. You can enjoy tender perennial herbs such as rosemary and biennial herbs such as parsley all winter long by potting them up and bringing them indoors for winter. Dig parsley plants now, making sure to get most of the root system. Pot them in deep containers, water well, leave them outdoors for a few weeks in a shaded area to recover from transplant shock. Once they've revived, bring them indoors before a hard freeze and place in a sunny window. You should be able to harvest fresh parsley leaves all fall, and if the plant gets enough light, it will even produce new growth. By late winter, the leaf quality will decrease as the plant gets ready to produce a seed stalk. At that time, simply compost the plant. Many rosemary varieties are hardy to zone 7. In colder areas, you bring your plant indoors to survive in winter. Pot it up and allow time for it to adjust to container life. Bring it indoors before a hard freeze and place in a sunny southern window. Rosemary likes cool temperatures, high humidity, and barely moist soil in winter. Place in a 50 to 60 degree room. Keep the humidity high by misting often and place the pot on a pebble tray filled with water. Water the pot just enough to keep the soil from drying out. Your plant may not grow much in winter, but should survive and be ready to go outdoors next spring. Plus, you'll have the fragrance and taste of fresh rosemary in your kitchen all winter. Herbs such as thyme, oregano, and mint can spend the winter indoors in pots to provide fresh leaves for cooking while the snow flies. Simply move them back outdoors in spring and plant them in the garden. If you don't have room to bring in a large potted plant, take cuttings of rosemary, lavender, pineapple sage, and other woody or perennial herbs. Root the 4 to 6 inch long cuttings by dipping the cut ends in a rooting hormone powder. Stick the cuttings in a pot filled with moistened vermiculite or sand. Cover the pot with a clear plastic bag with slits in it. Keep in a warm, bright room out of direct sunlight. Once rooted, cuttings can be transplanted into individual pots and grown under lights all winter. Sow seeds. While annual herbs such as basil need to be sown in each spring, some will do the sowing themselves and come back year after year. Culinary herbs that readily self-sow include coriander and dill. Collect the seeds and store them in glass jars in a cool location. Sow them next spring. You can also allow the seeds to naturally drop to the ground in the garden and self-sow on their own. In warm winter areas, you may have a continual supply of these herbs throughout the winter, depending on the weather. From Dave's Garden e-newsletter, Winter is an etching, spring a watercolor, summer an oil painting, and autumn a mosaic of them all. That was said by Stanley Horowitz. The more colorful the food, the better. I try to add color to my diet, which means vegetables and fruits. Misty May Treanor said that. This toad will become your fall flowering prince by Tamara Galbraith. If you, like me, you get a little tired of mum overkill, you know there's a toad which turns to a flowering, handsome prince with the kiss of autumn. Toad lilies, or Tricertis, are Asian natives of the lily family that generally flower during fall. And oh, what flowers! Featuring clusters of delicate 2-inch star-shaped blossoms on top of arcing 12 to 24-inch stems, many toad lily types are highlighted by wild speckling and striping on the flowers or leaves, or both. Some of the newer hybrids also have striking variegated foliage. The most commonly available Tricertis in the U.S. is T. hirta, though gardeners may also come across T. bakerii, T. flava, or T. stolonifera. Tony Avent's Plant Delights Nursery probably has the best retail selection of Tricertis available to gardeners. Most of the common Tricertis types have purplish flowers and plain green leaves, but Plant Delights selection covers all of the lovely toad lily variations. Check out the unusual yellow spotted flowers on Golden Leopard or the crazy flecked foliage of Lunar Landing. Lightning Strike has golden streaks on the leaves and orchid-like flowers, while Minazuki features chartreuse leaves and lavender flowers. I recently planted the gorgeous variegated Imperial Banner in a dark spot in my front yard, and it really lit up the space. So you can see, there is quite a variety to choose from. Like a true toad, Tricertis prefers moist shade, making it a lovely companion to hostas, bruneras, and ferns. The rhizomatous roots will spread, but not to the point of invasiveness. Imagine Mine has grown into a large but polite 2-by-2-foot clump in 4 years in a clay-heavy shade bed. Toad lilies are not without some problems, however. The leaves of my Miyazaki get chewed to bits by something every year in midsummer. Some years it's been caterpillars, but this year it was a big fat katydid that almost totally defoliated the plant. I could never find him at the scene of the crime. When I did track him down, I discovered he was apparently spending his days lounging underneath a nearby Adirondack chair and then feasting on my Tricertis at night. So, keep your BT and or orange oil handy. With toad lilies, you'll probably need one of the two eventually. If you are not squeamish, hand-pick the offending critter and offer it to the nearest hungry mockingbird. Luckily, toad lilies also seem to be resilient. My Miyazaki is currently covered with brilliant speckled blooms, although its leaves still look a bit worse for wear. Another problem with toad lilies that has recently been discovered is Tricertis floral virus. This disease seems to have spread from the Tricertis raspberry mousse hybrid and can cause an unusual blotchy color to develop in infected plants, mostly the purple-flowered types. Tests are ongoing, but if you see weird mottling on the blossoms of your toad lily, it's likely your plant is infected and should be removed. Viruses like these are terribly hard to eradicate once they take hold. I did a Google search on Tricertis raspberry mousse and found several nurseries still selling it, including one of the big box stores. Needless to say, I fired off an email to the company, letting them know these plants carry an infection and should probably be removed from their catalog. We'll see if I hear back. Of course, if you are not planning on growing a variety of different toad lilies, putting a raspberry mousse in your flower bed is mostly likely okay, as the virus does not seem to affect non-Tricertis plants, just other toad lilies. At any rate, it's always good to be aware, but there are so many beautiful varieties of this plant, it would be a real shame if gardeners were to ignore the different types being offered. And next, Leadwort. A True Blue Fall Friend by Gwen Bruno. This easy care creeper sends up dainty blooms in fall when most other perennials are winding down. In addition to its intensely blue flowers and long bloom time, Leadwort has the added benefit of color-changing foliage. Leadwort stays close to the ground, reaching only 6 to 10 inches tall. One small plug quickly spreads to form a mat 12 to 18 inches across. One of the few perennials with blooms of true deep blue. Plumbago's showy flowers emerge in late summer and continue through fall. As an added benefit, the plant's glossy green leaves take on a brilliant red cast as temperatures cool, eventually turning a mahogany color that provides interest long into the fall. In addition to its common name of leadwort, it is also known as dwarf plumbago or hardy plumbago, from the Latin plumbum, or lead, and agere, or to resemble. First used by Pliny the Elder in the 1st century A.D., the name is probably a reference to the plant's lead-blue flowers or the lead-colored stains that the sap can leave on the skin. Pliny also believed that the plant could cure lead poisoning. This native of western China is hardy in zones 5 through 9. Leadwort prefers a full sun to part shade exposure, ideally a spot with morning sun and afternoon shade. It does best when planted in well-drained, rich soil. Spreading by underground rhizomes, it can be an aggressive grower, although it's relatively easy to keep under control by spring division. Plants emerge very late in spring, sometimes not till middle of May, so you may want to avoid trimming the plant in the fall, since old uncut stems can serve as a visual reminder of the still dormant plant. Leadwort makes a handsome border edging or skirting for shrubs. It's ideal for interplanting with spring tulips or daffodils, since the late-emerging plumbago is just leafing out as bulb foliage begins to fade. Its cobalt-blue blooms offer the perfect foil for such autumn beauties as peach or pink mums, rosy sedum, or rich red pansies. Attractive to butterflies, the flowers can extend the season of a butterfly garden. From HGTV's Weekend Gardener, 9 Fall and Winter Greens to Grow Other Than Kale by Kelly Smith Trimble. Don't get me wrong, I love kale. Love it. But it's not the only healthy green in the seed catalog worth ordering. Consider adding these other nutritious, easy-to-grow crops to your fall garden repertoire. Mustard is a must-have for the winter garden. It tolerates both cold winter weather and the occasional warm snap. The red giant variety adds color and spice to salads and, like most mustard varieties, can be sautéed or used in baked dishes. Mizuna, an Asian green that's part of the mustard family. Mizuna tastes a bit like arugula and has frilly leaves like frizzy lettuce. It tolerates cold well in the garden and can be eaten fresh in salads or sautéed in other dishes. Look for both green and purple varieties. Purple can be especially striking in a garden border. Tatsoi, another Asian green, also in the mustard family. Tatsoi grows in pretty rosettes low to the ground, and small round leaves have a gentle spiciness great for salads or stir-frying. Harvest outer leaves as new leaves form from center. Arugula. You'll love it even more when you realize how easy it is to grow. If you have a big appetite for this beloved green, sow seeds every few weeks to keep the harvest coming through fall and winter and in spring. Beets are normally grown for the roots, but the tender young greens are tasty too. Providing ample water can stunt root growth, but will encourage plumper greens if that's what you're after. Chard. In the same family as beets, chard has bold colored stems and contrasting leaf veins. The popular Bright Lights variety is grown for its multicolored stems that look beautiful in the garden. Chard leaves have a fairly mild flavor compared with other, spicier winter greens, and the stems taste a bit like beets. Spinach. Related to beets and chard, spinach is a well-known salad green, simple to grow in both fall and spring. Bloomsdale is a favorite old variety with pretty crinkled leaves. Pick the young leaves for baby spinach and skip the bags at the grocery store. Radishes. Like beets, radishes are typically grown for the edible roots, but the leaves also pack a lot of nutrition and flavor. Sow seed closely and pick young leaves as you would microgreens. Romaine. Of course, you can also grow lettuce. Many varieties do not survive the cold weather well, but romaine is one exception, and there are others. When reading up on lettuce varieties, look for ones that specifically mention cold tolerance. This article is by Susan Banks. Fall is here, but you can still keep planting. Many people quit planting after spring, but seasoned gardeners know that late summer and early fall are great times to accent boring plantings or redo tired beds. You also might save some money, since some nurseries discount perennials, shrubs, and trees now. I thought it was a good time to talk about some of my favorite plants and to approach experienced gardeners and professionals about theirs. Most are perennials and shrubs and can be planted now. Some are annuals to put on your list for next season. Even though I hate the color orange, I absolutely love the daylily, Primal Scream. The flower is huge, and its tangerine pink color pops in the flower bed. When I first saw this plant, it cost more than $75. These days, you can get it lots cheaper, as low as $15. As with most daylilies, they require minimal care. I do shear my daylilies back to about 8 inches from the ground after they finish blooming. They will flush up fresh growth that does not look so bedraggled at the end of the season. Panicle hydrangeas are workhorses in the garden, easily surviving the most horrific weather without a blink. My favorite cultivar is Limelight, and for those with small spaces, Little Lime works well. The bloom's creamy chartreuse color is lovely, especially when paired with scarlet roses. It also blooms later in the season, providing color after some garden stalwarts are finished. Richard Liberto, owner of Liberto Landscape Design, recommends Walker's Low and Little Twitch Napata, two cultivars of catmint. He loves them because they are reliable, hardy, deer-proof, long-blooming, and an excellent pollinator, he says. Banana Cream Shasta Daisy is a compact cultivar growing 15 to 18 inches tall and 24 inches wide. Semi-double, lemon-yellow flowers that fade to creamy white bloom profusely from late spring through summer. It has dark green, semi-glossy foliage that is resilient to whiteflies, aphids, and beetles. And once established, it's drought-resistant. I consider Banana Cream to be the mainstay of the perennial border, cottage garden, rock gardens, pots, and most definitely the small garden, Liberto says. Penn State Extension and Post-Gazette columnist Sandy Feather says she has many favorite plants. Right this minute, Indian Pink is in full bloom in my yard. It blooms all summer. I have it in sun and shade, and it does very well. Susan Silverman, a past winner of the PG's Great Gardens Contest and a gifted master gardener, loves forever purple coral bells. The color is incredible. Sarah Mendak and her partner, Susie Lobdell, own Flower Pots, a landscape design company. She lists a few plants they use often in their projects. Forest Pansy Redbud, blueberries in white flowers in the spring, edible berries in red fall color, and Creeping Jenny, so versatile, great for container gardening, ground cover, and excellent for water gardening. She also likes Lady's Mantle, a clumping perennial, and Leyland Cypress, a great, fast-growing privacy screen that is deer-resistant. Bernadette Kezar, another Great Gardens Contest winner, chose Love Lies Bleeding, an annual that grows quickly from seed. Got hooked on this plant a few years ago, she says. I call this plant the fringe of my garden. Its long red tassels hang gracefully almost to the ground. The 5 to 6 foot height makes it an eye catcher. She also loves tree lilies, which have huge, fragrant blooms and top out at 4 to 6 feet. They should be planted in the fall. When you have a group of these, they perfume the entire garden. Calla lilies are a third favorite. I think of this flower as my tailor plant. Simple, upright, and elegant.
That's all the time we have for today. You've been listening to Out in the Garden on the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Out in the Garden is available as a podcast by visiting our website at ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, give us a call. Our telephone number is 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.